WJR Oshkosh and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Lionel Moyes. Mass shootings across California. An 11th victim has died following the shooting at a dance studio in Monterey Park during Chinese New Year celebrations. Officials say it's the worst mass shooting in Los Angeles County history. Seven people were killed in two different shootings in the Northern California area Monday.
The two shootings unfolding at farms in Half Moon Bay, just miles apart. One of the farms is a mushroom farm. A 67-year-old man was arrested while sitting calmly in a car nearby. San Mateo County Sheriff Christina Corpus says the victims were at the farms.
They were on site on the property, so they're believed to be workers, but we can't confirm that yet.
She says children who had just gotten out of school witnessed the shootings. Alex Stone, ABC News.
A suspect is in custody. Governor Gavin Newsom calling it tragedy upon tragedy, tweeting, "At the hospital meeting with victims of a mass shooting when I get pulled away to be briefed about another shooting." This is ABC News. Actress and model Pamela Anderson is calling out a popular comedian in her upcoming new memoir.
Pamela Anderson says comedian and home improvement star Tim Allen flashed her on the set of the show. That according to an excerpt of her upcoming memoir obtained by Variety. She says it was 1991. She was 23 years old. And on her first day of filming, she walked out of her dressing room and saw Allen in the hallway in a robe. Anderson claims Allen opened the robe, exposing himself, saying it was only fair because he had seen the Playboy model naked. Now we're even, she claims he said, and she laughed uncomfortably. Allen tells Variety, quote, "It never happened. I would never do such a thing." Anderson's book is out January 31st. Jason Athanson, ABC News, Hollywood.
A woman who went viral on LinkedIn for sending a sheet cake with her resume printed on it to Nike's headquarters has landed a job. 27-year-old Carly Plavinac Blackburn told Good Morning America she's the director of growth marketing at a software startup called Curemint, saying the company makes software to help dental companies automate their business. Lionel Moyes, ABC News.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lierley helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
on WISS 1100 AM 98.3 FM Oshkosh Air Support.
Go by any construction site in Wisconsin, you're going to see a lot of Michaels trucks. Since 2014, they've had more than $1 billion worth of contracts with the state government.
A large part of those coming with Foxconn without any results in that area.
Do we want a governor who might be giving his brothers the contract? I think he needs to answer that before the election.
We'll just kick that one down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But of course, Michaels Corporation would get to build that said bridge.
Listen Monday through Friday from 2 to 3. It's Dueling Tangents.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gina Beauclair.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
A Shiro's work is never done. You care for the house, the kids, and our future. We're so grateful for all you do. Now, it's time to care for yourself and save a little more for retirement. A free 3-minute online chat can give you the personalized tips you need to boost your retirement savings now. Visit AsiaRetirement.org today.
A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and whatever, just don't text and drive. Visit stoptextsstoprex.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Competition inside the Civic Media network of our hosts. As we know, I'm a very competitive person. You know how competitive I am? Prick me to start giving blood. They tell me that there's been a contest to see who can fill up their bag the fastest. 5 minutes, 4 seconds. I got done and I said, did I win? And I said, you were the fastest all day.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. Thank you for joining us today during your lunch hour, the noon hour. At 12:30, we are going to be joined by Phil Rocco, Marquette Associate Professor of Political Science, who... before, back in the election cycle, wrote a piece on what a flat tax could look like in Wisconsin and why there's very few people that would benefit from that. But he's going to talk to us today about the plan that has actually been proposed by the Wisconsin legislature and what that could actually look like. So stick around for that conversation. But coming up first, we are joined by Bob Keefe, who is the executive director of E2 Environmental Entrepreneurs, which is a national nonpartisan group of business owners, investors, and professionals who leverage economic research and their business perspective to advance policies that are good for the environment and good for the economy. And at the break, we were talking about K-cups, and you said someone texted in about the K-cups? Because we're all skeptical now.
Yeah, and so there was a study done by Canadian researchers who found that using the individual K-cups is actually better for the environment than making the whole pot of coffee.
Yes.
So Texter from the 414 says, if I understand how this was determined, a K-cup is a definite amount in a specific usage, whereas making a pot is using a whole bunch of coffee, whether it all gets consumed or not. The savings to the earth come from using less coffee beans, less farming, etc. This is how I understand it. So thank you from the 414.
Bob, what do you think? Do you buy that?
You know, I have a hard time buying that. I mean, yes, we are taxing our environment with coffee farms and with water and all of that. But gosh, just throwing those little cups in the garbage or even recycling them and knowing that they're probably not being recycled just seems like a bad deal.
I
don't buy it.
I agree.
I'm sticking with the Mr. Coffee myself. With the coffee cup.
There you go. All right. Well, Bob Keefe, thank you so much for joining the show today. And so tell us more because we're going to talk more about clean jobs in Wisconsin and the economic impact that being how you can both be good for the economy and for the environment. But tell us more just about environmental entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. And listen, I'm so excited to be with you guys. What a cool idea for a show, taking things like flat taxes and climate change and making them fun and interesting. I was hoping you were going to start with a couple of climate jokes or something, Kristen. No? You got any good climate jokes?
Do I have any good climate jokes? No.
I've been thinking all weekend about this. I'm waiting for the opening. I've been thinking of all weekend about something to use on your show that would be befitting of such a wise and cool and interesting show in such an interesting state. Just for the record, can I try
anything?
Can I try it?
Go ahead.
So we all know about, and what's a better joke than a fart joke, right? We all know about cows. We all know about methane and how that's adding to global warming, right?
Yeah.
So why did the Wisconsin dairy farmer worry so much about global warming?
Why?
Kristen? Because his cows kept cutting the cheese. Come on, huh?
All right. Did you come up with that?
I did.
Nice.
As far as you know. As
golf
far
clap.
As you know.
Golf clap.
It was either me or one of my daughters.
That was pretty clever. Cutting the cheese. Smell our dairy air.
That's. But all joking aside, climate change is a serious issue, right?
Yeah.
And what you asked me about my organization, E2 Environmental Entrepreneurs. We're a national network of more than 10,000 people, 10,000 business owners, investors, and others who care about the economy and care about the environment. And we do a lot of work around making the economic case and telling the economic story about how the economy and the environment are not at odds, but we can't have one without the other. And what we're seeing now in this country, in this world, in your state, is that the economic costs of climate change are adding up. Climate change is battering our economy, from farmers to the outdoor industry to business people to everyday homeowners. Good news is we can do something about it. We're finally doing something about it, and we're creating a lot of jobs, driving economic growth by doing so and reducing those costs that we're all feeling.
So, because I think to a certain extent we understand when you talk about clean energy jobs, it's jobs at work in windmills or solar power or something. So, like, what kind of, like, how broad, or what are we actually talking about when we talk about clean energy jobs?
Right, right. Well, naturally, you're going to think about the wind turbine worker or
totally.
The guy or woman installing solar panels on your roof, right? But the clean energy space is a lot bigger than that. And my organization, E2, has been tracking clean energy jobs around the country for more than a decade now. And what we now know, Kristen, is that there are more than 3 million people, about 3.2 million people, that work in clean energy in every single state in the country. And then in Wisconsin alone, we're talking about 71,000 Wisconsinites, according to our latest Clean Jobs America report and a companion report that we do called Clean Jobs Midwest that breaks all this stuff down for every state and every sector. So when you look at those 71,000 jobs in Wisconsin, about 6,500 of them are in renewable energy. Yes, the solar and the wind folks like you're talking about. Another 6,000 work in clean vehicles, supply chains for the car companies that are making electric vehicles, or we track any job that is related to a car that has a plug in it. So hybrid plug-in vehicles, for instance, those sort of things. But the biggest part of the clean energy space is something we don't really think about too much, which is energy efficiency. About 58,000 people work in energy efficiency related jobs in Wisconsin. What does that look like? Those are construction workers putting insulation in our roofs or changing out our windows in our houses, in our offices, in our homes. It's electricians working on LED lighting systems in our big office buildings in our cities and in our towns that are saving consumers and businesses money with every monthly electric bill. A lot of it is around the HVAC work, heating, air conditioning, ventilation work. Companies that are swapping out dirty old gas or other furnaces with electric and more energy efficiency models, things like that. And by the way, it's also all of the people that are working in factories, I think including some in Wisconsin, that are making Energy Star appliances, whether it's better dishwashers and refrigerators that are going in our homes or huge energy efficient heating and air conditioning systems that are going into office buildings around the country. So the good news is these jobs are spread across a lot of occupations. They typically pay a little bit better than jobs that similar jobs in non-clean energy businesses. And with some of the policies that we recently passed in Washington and elsewhere, there's going to be a lot more of them.
So it sounds like, I mean, at least as you just described it, it's a pretty broad definition of what can fall under, because I would not have thought that just working on the appliances that are high efficiency appliances is then categorized under clean energy jobs. And so did you know that, Jane? And so that's like, that's really encouraging, because I think you're right. I think my mind goes to people working on installing solar panels or people working on the wind and EV. Yes, for sure. But even the manufacturing of products that are just energy efficient is really interesting, because I wouldn't have thought that, especially in a manufacturing state like Wisconsin historically. I think more people should know that that also falls under what the clean energy sector can do for jobs.
Absolutely. And just for the record, our data is based on data and the way that the Department of Energy tracks it, the U.S. Department of Energy. So that's how they track energy jobs, period. So they also track jobs in oil and gas and jobs in coal, jobs in nuclear, et cetera. And this is how the Department of Energy tracks clean energy jobs now. And if you look across it, all those sectors in energy, there are about 2.5 times as many people that work in clean energy now than work in fossil fuel energy, believe it or not.
Wow.
And that matters in a place like Wisconsin, which, by the way, doesn't have a lot of coal or gas the last time I was there, but it does have some cold winters. And it does have some energy efficiency people, right?
I know that twang makes me think that you're from the South, and so you're not less likely to have experienced as many cold winters as we have.
I've done my best to avoid winters my entire life, so yes.
We're talking to Bob Keefe, who's the executive director of E2 Environmental Entrepreneurs. Jane, do you have a question?
I do, Bob. I just want to say you give me hope that more businesses are embracing this, because it's always seemed completely counterproductive to me that you're going to destroy the environment and you're going to kill off your customers. This does not seem like a good business model.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, the other thing is, from a business perspective, this is a bottom line issue as well, right? Some of the biggest drivers of clean energy growth in this country have been really big technology companies. And why is that? Because they use really big data centers to make things like this internet chat happen and to make our email happen and everything we do online. Those data centers use a ton of electricity, and they want the cheapest electricity there is. And right now, the cheapest electricity there is, hands down, in just about every single part of the country, just about every single part of the world, is solar and wind. So a lot of the solar and the wind growth that we've seen over the years has been because businesses and major employers and major users of electricity are looking for a cheaper route. The good news is we're here.
Absolutely. It's here. So when we come back, because I want to bring you through the break, because I want to talk more specifically about Wisconsin and, you know, what creates what, because it sounds like we're top 20 for how many clean energy jobs we have here.
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah, right. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so talking about maybe how we got to where we are right now, what can encourage more job growth politically, how this is faring. So when we come back from our first from this break, Bob Keefe, executive director of E2 Environmental Entrepreneurs, will still be here. Maybe he'll even have another funny joke for us about cows cutting the cheese in the derriere of Wisconsin. All right, this is As Goes Wisconsin.
Bonkers Saloon in Manitowoc salutes America's armed forces and all of our military veterans for the sacrifices they have made. Our troops are our angels of freedom and our wings of protection fighting to defend our country. We honor our warriors for their dedication and bravery, as well as our veterans and those who have given their lives in the line of duty. They are America's true heroes. This tribute comes to you from Bonkers Saloon in Manitowoc. That's Bonkers Saloon in Manitowoc. Wishing everybody a very happy and a very healthy new year.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us. You don't know my kind.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Join the conversation with your favorite hosts or shows anytime. Follow Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Share your thoughts on our social media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media Network of local radio stations here for you.
Here's your updated forecast. Lows level off around 23 overnight under cloudy skies. Winds out of the west, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Daytime highs approaching 31 tomorrow. Cloudy skies expected. Lows dip down to about 22 tomorrow night. Overcast skies. About an inch of snow Wednesday through Wednesday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 26.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. I got Jane Matinere on the board, and we are talking to Bob Keefe, who is the executive director of E2 Environmental Entrepreneurs. And I was kind of surprised, I was going to say, when I found out that Wisconsin ranks number 17 out of all 50 states in clean energy jobs. And so what, as far as, I know you were talking about the Midwest jobs report, but what is it in Wisconsin? Is it what you were saying before as far as those high efficiency appliances?
Well, there has been a lot of growth in energy efficiency in Wisconsin, and that's jobs at manufacturing plants making Energy Star appliances for sure. Another huge area that saw a real jump last year in Wisconsin and nationally, Kristen, and will continue to, is around electric vehicles. Look, every single car maker in the country, every single car maker in the world is shifting to electric vehicles right now. And last year alone in Wisconsin, there was a 26% increase in the number of people that are working in electric vehicle related jobs. These are, again, electric vehicles, hybrid plug-ins, et cetera. More than 6,000 people now work in Wisconsin in that area. So it's going to be huge. And when we think of some of the federal policies that have recently passed, the two biggest is the Inflation Reduction Act and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the big bipartisan infrastructure act. Those are going to create tremendous tax benefits and investments into clean energy, including into electric vehicles, but also into wind, into solar, into energy efficiency. So that is going to be, we think, is one of the biggest job drivers this country has ever seen. Sounds like hyperbole, but it's not.
It's not.
Or hyperbole. It sounds like hyperbole, too,
hyperbole.
By the way.
I just love your accent. So, you know, we talked about a little bit about this on Friday, because Wisconsin right now, as you referenced before, we do have very cold winters comparatively, but comparatively internally, our winters are only getting warmer and warmer. In fact, in Milwaukee and Green Bay, more than any other city in the country is seeing the biggest overall average increase in temperature each winter, which is a problem. Like, we're seeing the problems in our Great Lakes not having enough ice and what that does to a lot of different things. And so in that conversation, we saw that $165 billion it's cost to clean up the 18 major climate catastrophes that happened in 2022. And so as the core part of E2 being what's both good for the environment and good for the economy, like, what, how does this come down to, like, your mission statement of convincing people that the both can exist together?
Right, right. Well, look at those numbers a little bit more, Kristen. I mean, nationally, yes, it was $165 billion worth of damage last year alone. In Wisconsin alone, it was more than $2 billion. And if you look over time, most of that has been from flooding, from some of the things that you were just talking about, when you have a faster snow melt, when you have extreme rainfall, which the state has experienced in spades in recent years. You know, of the $17 billion in climate-related disasters in Wisconsin since 1980, about half of that, more than half of that, $8 billion has been from flooding alone. That's according to NOAA, some of those numbers that you were talking about. And so what does that look like? What does that mean to our economy? Well, it means that farmers' fields are getting flooded out. When farmers' fields get flooded out, that obviously impacts one of the biggest sectors of the state's economy, but it also impacts us all at the grocery line, right? It causes the price of food and other goods to go up. Look at what happens when snowpack is not what it used to be. That's a big hit on Wisconsin's outdoor industry, for instance, which is a $9 billion industry. 90,000 people work in outdoor-related jobs in your state. That's skiing and fishing and everything else that's getting battered by climate change.
And so how long have you been working? Because you also wrote a book. You're the author of Say it for me.
You're not the first one. Climatenomics.
Climatenomics. Thank you. Washington, Wall Street, and the Economic Battle to Save Our Planet. And so how, since you've started working in this industry, I guess, of evangelizing that these two can coexist, how much have you seen attitudes change, specifically on Wall Street and of business owners?
Well, it's getting to be an easier story to tell and an easier story to understand. Look, I mean, yes, climate change has been happening since the beginning of history, but the past 8 years have been the 8 warmest years on record globally. In the past decade, we've had 7 of the most expensive years for climate disasters. So this is hitting people in the pocketbook, right? I mean, look at homeowners insurance. Homeowners insurance is up 50% over the past decade. Anybody who owns a home is paying more because those insurance companies are getting hammered by hurricanes in the east and fires in the west, et cetera. So to me, the discussion is changing. People are starting to understand that this is a pocketbook issue. And when something becomes a pocketbook issue, it becomes more relevant to people and they care more about it. And what I like to say, Kristen, during the break, we were talking a little bit about the politics of all of this. What I like to say is, look, I don't care if you believe in science. I don't care if you like polar bears. I don't care if you drive a Prius or a pickup truck. The fact of the matter is climate change is hitting you in the pocketbook.
Yeah.
And we've got to do something about it. And again, the good news is, thanks to some of these policies that we passed at the federal level, some of the stuff that we hope the state is moving forward in Wisconsin, we'll be able to not only reduce some of these costs of climate change, but drive jobs and economic growth while doing it.
Absolutely. Well, for any of our listeners who want more information, where can they get more information either about you, your book, or E2?
Well, thank you for that. Absolutely. Go to E2.org to find out more about E2, and you can look up some of this data on the state and both jobs and costs, and also nationally. If you want to know about the book, go to climatenomicsbook.com, climatenomicsbook.com.
Awesome. Well, Bob Keefe, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Thank you for the joke, and we'll have to have you back when the next jobs report comes out.
I'd like that. Thank you, Kristen.
All right. Have a great day. Coming up next, Phil Rocco from Marquette University will be here to talk about the implications of a flat tax. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
ABC News, I'm Lionel Moyes. Mass shootings across California. An 11th victim has died following the shooting at a dance studio in Monterey Park during Chinese New Year celebrations. Officials say it's the worst mass shooting in Los Angeles County history. 7 people were killed in 2 different shootings in the Northern California area Monday.
The 2 shootings unfolding at farms in Half Moon Bay, just miles apart. One of the farms is a mushroom farm. A 67-year-old man was arrested while sitting calmly in a car nearby. San Mateo County Sheriff Christina Corpus says the victims were at the farms.
They were on site on the property, so they're believed to be workers, but we can't confirm that yet.
She says children who had just gotten out of school witnessed the shootings. Alex Stone, ABC News.
A suspect is in custody. Governor Gavin Newsom calling it tragedy upon tragedy, tweeting, "At the hospital meeting with victims of a mass shooting when I get pulled away to be briefed about another shooting." This is ABC News.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
The devil's advocates, because freedom.
But Dom, we've been following a couple of big stories this week. Truck convoy leader has no idea where he is and is driving in circles around I-495. He didn't know precisely where he was going anyways or where he was at the time. Apparently, he put the convoy back on the road, headed back up north, and he's back in Scranton. So
I totally would have protested this tyranny, but damn, the traffic was so bad.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Thursdays at 11:30, we are joined by Dr. Michael McCutcheon, who is a psychologist, a lecturer, and additionally, he's won 10,000 fantasy football leagues and loves to help people make easy, free money. Dr. Mike fixes your life and your lineup.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. on WISS 1100 AM 98.3 FM Oshkosh Air Support.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Jean of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you. One for you, 19 for me.
Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Jane Matinair is on the board. No matter where you're listening across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app, thank you for tuning in. And a reminder that if you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts. And today, I know you're right on this, Jane, but today is the first day that you can start turning in your taxes. They're starting to accept if you want to get your tax refund. I don't know if I'll get a tax refund or not this year,
really?
But we'll find out. But with that, we thought we maybe would talk a little bit more about what future taxes could potentially look like in the great state of Wisconsin. So Dr. Phil Rocco is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, and this is his, I think, third time joining us on the show.
Three-peat? Is that a hat trick?
Three-peat. I like that. Yeah. So, friend of the show, officially, I would say. And
all right.
I invited you on because back in election season, when the flat tax was just an idea that Tim Michaels kind of threw out there, and then the conservatives were very upset that people took him at his word. Well, it's not actually a plan. And now we actually do have a plan. But in the hypothetical stages, you wrote a guest article for Recombobulation Area about what a flat tax would do for most of us in Wisconsin. And it was great. It was very detailed. And now we actually have a plan that has been proposed that would take, I think, is it 3.25, a flat tax of 3.25%?
Right.
So
yeah, it would be a flat tax of 3.25%.
Which is pretty low.
Yes.
Which is pretty low.
Like for comparison, like right now, the tax rates go from 3.45, I think, all the way up to 7.56% for the top bracket. So that's a lot of revenue disappearing overnight. And the thing that was interesting was that when we wrote that piece back in the fall, like there were two different versions of the flat tax that were sort of floating out there. One of them was a flat tax with a slightly higher rate, mm-hmm. which meant that, some people's taxes would in fact go up. Lower income folks' taxes would go up, but you wouldn't have, as much revenue disappearing. The other option was this kind of flat tax, which just brings down the top rates to the lowest, or in this case, below the lowest rate. And what it means in practical terms is two things. One is that it can only be described as sort of like a bonanza for people at the top part of the income distribution. So the richest 1.4% of taxpayers under this proposal get 1/3 of the total kind of benefits, right? In monetary terms.
And how many people does that end up being? Is that just like,
I mean, one.
So it's 1% of our population?
Right. That's, it's a pretty small number. So, I mean, I think, just a pretty small number of taxpayers.
And do we know what threshold of how much those people are making?
So that's the 1.4%. That's people making 500,000 and over.
Okay.
Right. So they're going to see, that 1.4% is going to see about 1/3 of the tax breaks. The 70% of the taxpayers are going to receive only about 17.8% of the total tax cut. So, I mean, in practical terms, this is not going to be, there's going to be like a few movies and maybe dinner, per year for most filers. But for the people at the top of the income distribution, it's like a windfall. It's a lot. So that's the first thing, just in terms of like, the rates, are going to seem like they come down, right? But in reality, most of the benefit is concentrated at the very top of the income distribution. The other thing, and we can talk about this more maybe, after the break, is that it's not just who the tax cuts are going to. It's also the fact that every year when this is fully implemented, over $5 billion in revenue is just going to disappear. And if you put that in practical terms, it means that you could cut something like, the entire UW system budget and all funding for corrections, and you would still need to cut more in order to account for that. And you can do all kinds of comparisons, like it's more than four times all state K-12 spending, more than four times like the state and local shared revenue to local governments. Like, it's a lot of money.
Also basically almost as much as our surplus is right now.
Yeah. I mean, so this idea is like the surplus is going to maybe like hide the effects of this for like a year. But then once it's fully implemented, it's a lot of revenue going out the door very, very quickly in a way that would be very dramatically, would result in some dramatic negative economic effects for the state, which we can talk about. But the idea that LeMahieu and Republicans are kind of pushing here is that like the surplus means that we're overtaxed. But the surplus is really sort of like a one-time perfect storm because of a variety of different trends. It's not like part of a bigger trend. So what that means is that once that surplus is gone, this is going to be a dramatic reduction in or require dramatic reduction in state spending. Or alternatively, they could just raise, you know, the sales tax, but they'd have to raise it a lot in order to make up the difference, which is, you know, a regressive tax, a tax that's mm-hmm. going to fall mostly on working class, middle class folks. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to like project the future and like how this could work out. But the bottom line is distributionally for most people, this is going to mean not a lot of savings in terms of taxes and potentially huge cuts to vital services that people have come to rely on.
Phil, just a couple things. First of all, I can't be the only person who just lies awake at night, tossing and turning, worried that the wealthiest 1.4% in Wisconsin are struggling to buy a third vacation home. It's so painful, and I've lost so much sleep. But additionally, a couple of years ago, didn't they try this, something like this, in Kansas? And they Yes. essentially broke Kansas?
Yes, this is what was called the Kansas experiment, right? What the governor Sam Brownback at the time described as an adrenaline shot in the heart of the Kansas economy. And it was the largest tax cut they'd ever seen in Kansas. It brought down the top rate from like 6.4% down to 4.9%. So that the wealthiest people were paying basically the same marginal rate as the middle class. And the idea was that plus a bunch of different other things, we're going to generate all of this new investment in Kansas. Employers were going to start setting up shop there. You're going to see this huge kind of multiplier effect. In fact, the reverse happened, right? So what that meant was that the state had to slash spending in fairly exorbitant ways, right? Cutting money for highways, cutting money for the state Medicaid program, cutting money for schools, like so that janitors and librarians couldn't get hired. And what that did was it reduced all of the sort of like economic multiplier effect that government spending has. So like when government spends, it means that people have contracts, private contractors who do business with the government get hired. There are all of these sort of attendant knock-on effects of government spending. And as a result, when you simply cut, you know, and, you know, Kansas cut a great deal, it basically meant that it couldn't fund a lot of these programs. And actually, it made it much sort of less attractive to come into the state because the state just wasn't offering a lot of services. So population growth kind of flattened out. And then by any sort of like any economic indicator, job growth, economic development or investment, the state just started tanking. And so by August 2014, S&P downgraded the state's credit rating. Like it was an economic disaster of unmitigated proportions that ultimately like led to Sam Brownback, who was once, I think, seen as a kind of potential presidential contender. It was a disgrace for him, and he sort of like left public life.
Oh my gosh.
Right. And so it's really hard to overstate just like what a just political and economic disaster was. And they guess what? They ended up repealing it because it was such a disaster.
So we're talking to Dr. Phil Rocco, who is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, about the proposed flat tax in Wisconsin. And has anyone ran that Kansas story by Lamahieu and Voss and been like, hey, how would we make it not, how would we avoid being like Kansas?
Well, there's this like alternative, like this like a speculative fiction universe of like what people say the whole Kansas experiment was really about. Like, so there's a whole like literature, like literature that like comes from conservative think tanks. It's like, no, it actually wasn't, you know, the tax cuts that caused all of these things. And they point to like any number of like a concatenation of other factors. Like, well, it must have been something else, right? But when you look at Kansas and you can just do the comparison to all of its neighboring states, that all of the different things that people suggest were going on in Kansas, they were also going on in those neighboring states. And what happened was like none of those neighboring states faced essentially the economic cliff that Kansas did. And so it's really hard to conclude that it's not the, you know, this yeah. Kansas experiment. But the thing is, it's really inconvenient for them to talk about this. I mean, it's because it's a really great example of just what it means to get rid of. So like the argument that I think is being made is that like a lot of this spending that's going on is like wasteful, right? And that like it's not a big deal to cut over $5 billion a year because there's so much waste. But the reality is like waste or, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse like is a really, really small percentage, right? If you were able to like calculate it, it's like really small percentage of what government actually does. And most of what government does is actually help to stimulate economic growth in the, you know, a variety of regions in the state. And so when you just, I think people can't actually conceptualize what that scale of cuts means for their everyday life, for the highways, right? You think about like the worst highway you've ever driven on in Wisconsin and imagine it getting perpetually worse. Like that's what $5 billion a year in outflow of revenue, you know, will make happen. Alternatively, you know, it's like a sale, potentially like that spending cuts plus a prohibitively high sales tax for a lot of people. So the argument I think that is getting made is that like that somehow this is going to induce population growth in the state and that it's actually like the progressivity of the tax code that's inhibiting that. The thing I would point to is that the projected population growth for Minnesota, more progressive tax code, is 12% out to 2040. Wisconsin's is already only 3% projected population growth out to 2040. There's no way on earth that, you know, what's going on here or what might be going on here is a, you know, a population surge as a result of a flat tax. There's, you know, it just, it defies the most basic common sense to make that argument.
And we can keep talking about it after the break because we only have about 2 minutes left before we have to go to the commercial, but it's also because I hear this a lot, and you think of like the states that are growing fastest, a lot of them do have sometimes no income tax, Texas, Florida. But they're also, I always say this, they're also a lot warmer than us, but I think that's so interesting to compare it to Minnesota, who's arguably colder than us, and you got to be like a Vikings fan, but you know, and the fact that I didn't know that discrepancy as far as what their population trend has been, despite it being a much more... in the last 12, 13 years, like the discrepancy between policies and how much they've been different with all things being the same as far as weather, climate, culture. And so we'll talk more about that when we get back.
Yeah, also, absolutely.
Yeah. And there's so many different ways I wanted to go with this, and we'll only have you for 8 minutes. So we'll just have to have you back, but stay with us. Dr. Phil Rocco is here. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I love working on my cars, but I wish I had more space for my shop.
Give General Steel a call. In business for over 30 years and with over 5,000 five-star customer reviews, General Steel can help with projects ranging from RV storage and garages to churches, workshops, and even major construction for Fortune 500 companies. And all General Steel custom buildings are backed by our 50-year warranty.
But that's got to cost a fortune.
Actually, General Steel buildings are more affordable than other building options. And thanks to our highly efficient construction, you can go from dreaming it to enjoying it in no time.
I need to give the General a call. How do I get more information?
Call 866-96-STEEL or visit mygeneralsteel.com to find out what General Steel can do for your home or business. That's 866-96-STEEL. Our team will answer your questions and offer you a customized quote. Just call 866-967-8335 now or mygeneralsteel.com.
Miss our conversations on air? Join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast.
cloudy skies
overnight
with a low of 23. West winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Daytime highs approaching 31 tomorrow. Overcast skies. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 22. About an inch of snow Wednesday through Wednesday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 26.
You're listening to a Civic Media radio station. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are talking to Dr. Phil Rocco, who is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, about the potential implications of a Wisconsin flat tax, which the current proposal sits at 3.25%, and what that could mean for Wisconsin. And this isn't even before the flat tax. Since I've moved home or moved back, there's been conversations around no income tax and what that could do. Mm-hmm. And there are some states, what is there, like 9 in total that have no income tax? But I think of, you know, Tennessee, Florida, Texas, I think Alaska, maybe Wyoming. But some of the states that can generate enough revenue otherwise to function without having an income tax. So what it kind of has to be in place, as far as you understand it, for a low to no income tax to work in a state?
Yeah. So like some states have deposits of natural resources that they can have franchise taxes on, right? I think about Alaska, you know, out west, there are states that just have a naturally occurring resource that you can sort of tax and generate revenue off of that. Okay. Other states have booming industries that bring in people who don't live in the state as tourists frequently, and you can use sales taxes much more effectively there because, you know, you have such a kind of booming tourist industry in dollar terms, right? So what ultimately you have to do if you don't want to have an income tax is, like, one option is you have to have some other sort of resource there. It's like a special tax that you can just leverage. The other thing you could do is create a really regressive tax code, right? That where you're relying on taxes that mainly fall on people who are poor, or, you know, working class, middle class folks, rely more heavily on property tax, which is something that states, you know, used to do. Wisconsin was one of the big pioneers in the early 20th century, in 1911, in really moving the state to a progressive income tax, because property is so hard to effectively and efficiently tax without, you know, a measure of corruption kind of getting involved there. So that was the big complaint about in the 19th century. It's really easy to hide property value and property wealth, especially back then. The other thing that you can do is just, like, slash services and just, like, you know, make government a lot less effective at doing the things we expected to do. And that's something that you definitely see in states that don't have kind of effective income tax regimes. But I think the thing that ultimately, you know, is sort of happening in Wisconsin is, you know, essentially every time the state cuts taxes, and by the way, we are already at the lowest mm-hmm. level of tax collection, lowest rate of tax collection on record, right? That's how much taxes have come down since the 1990s. Like, it is, we have really sucked out a lot of revenue in the state. And what that means, it's not like the demand goes away. It just means that either we're saying, you know, that we're not going to meet that demand, or we're pushing off the responsibility onto other levels of government, like local governments, or, like, which is why you see so many bond measures and millage increases in school districts now, right? Because there's still demand. We still have to pay for things.
Yeah.
Unless you just want, you know, the basic services that we expect as a society just fall apart. And it's also, I think, why governments are in such a, local governments are in such a difficult position right now, an increasingly impossible one. And so, like, that's the sort of bigger picture here. It's like, you know, it's easy to say, or easy to sort of have this concept, like, we're going to, you know, decrease taxes, step two, question mark, step two, step three, profit, right? The South Park underwear gnomes. But I think the bigger thing is that, like, the population trends in Wisconsin are really emblematic of population trends across the country. Like, people are moving from colder to warmer climates. Mm-hmm. That is not about taxes.
Yep.
Right. But then you look at Minnesota and it's like, why are people moving to that cold state, which in many cases is like colder than here, yeah, even, and less so to Wisconsin. And I think one of the really important answers is that you have economic policies that have led to the growth of a thriving, you know, metropolitan region in the Twin Cities, whereas Wisconsin is really disinvested from the economic power, you know, potential economic powerhouses of the state. And I think about the UW system as like one big place that when you cut the UW system, you are cutting an engine of economic growth for the state. That's what you're doing. You can say that you are, you know, sticking it to, you know, quote unquote, like liberal professors and elites and so forth. But what you're doing is you're screwing over the economy of the state.
Yeah. So, I mean, what this all obviously comes down to what will be months from now, the final budget. But it feels like this would be a non-starter as far as something that Governor Evers would sign. But do you think that there's any room for any kind of flat tax, even if it was a little bit higher? Or do you think this is dead in the water?
No, I think this is it would be hard to say that this is not, you know, dead in the water. The question is, you know, how much, you know, how much do Republicans want to like press the issue and extend budget negotiations and go to the mats over this, right? Yeah. How long do they want the budget fight effectively to be? And I think, you know, one thing that is going to be interesting is how the narrative about the flat tax kind of spins out there. I think the thing that Republicans, the sort of advantage this sort of accrues to them in debates like this is that, like, not much information gets out there about what the flat tax is, because people are like, oh, it's a flat tax, it's simpler, it's, you know, easier. But the way of describing it is, this is not a tax cut. This is a change in the way that we're using the power of government to distribute costs and benefits in society. And what this is going to do is redistribute benefits to the top income bracket in the state. And what it's going to mean for the rest of us is, you know, how are we going to fund highway construction? How are we going to fund schools? Mm-hmm. How are we going to do all the things that we need to do? And, you know, maybe you get like 200 additional bucks, you know, if you're at the right part of the income distribution, and like,
that you're probably, you know, going to be spending on a sales tax
that,
anyways. I guess.
Yeah,
that'll
exactly.
Just go immediately to the increases.
Or by the way, property taxes, which continue to go up, right? Somebody pays somewhere.
Exactly. All right. Well, Dr. Phil Rocco, thank you so much for joining us and breaking this down for us. I told at the break, that Kansas story is really something. And so maybe a little bit more noise about that, I think, would be good.
It's
but
wild.
We will have you back soon. Thank you so much for your time, sir. And have a great day.
With you, as ever.
All right. Take care. We are going to go to the top of the hour news, and when we come back, thanks again. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Rub on a lot of boats. Sucker, I ain't one. From now on, I'm keeping my pay. Ain't gonna need none. So put your 1044 where the sun don't shine. Straighten out your own damn mess. You can write me off, cause I ain't giving a dime to the
Are you an experienced maintenance technician? Do you wish you felt valued at your current position? If you answered yes to both questions, then say yes to PepsiCo of Oshkosh. PepsiCo rarely has maintenance openings. Most employees have been there more than 14 years, but PepsiCo is hiring right now and has 3 openings for experienced maintenance technicians. As a global top employer 3 years in a row, PepsiCo pays way above average, and you can't beat the benefits. Free continuing education, tuition reimbursement, and an
account balance pension plan, legit free money from the company to you. Plus, PepsiCo is committed to reducing the global carbon footprint through a PEP-positive corporate responsibility program. You're invited to the PepsiCo Job Fair on Wednesday, February 1st from 8 to noon, Thursday, February 2nd, 1 to 5 at the PepsiCo plant, 2541 West 20th Avenue in Oshkosh. Find more information at PepsiCoJobs.com or call 1-800-236-3720.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.